Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas. The following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room.
Subject to discussion live at LVRocks.com. That's the Centurion in charge of production, Mr. Con Solar. Thank you very much.
And you're welcome, man.
You're welcome. Once again, if it's Tuesday night in Las Vegas, it's time for Subject to Discussion. Once again, live at LVRocks.com and also as well as podcasted. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the program live as well as on the podcast and everybody in the chat room. It's Chris 101940. Net Ranger, I wonder if he's related to the Lone Ranger. I don't know. Myself and the John are in there. And the program's website is subjecttodiscussion.com. Email is subjecttodiscussion@lvrocks.com. And tonight, after the political news to me and the news to you, we'll be joined by Michael J.W. Stickings of the Reaction blog, as well as the John Edwards One America Committee blog. And in the second hour, it'll be Jamie, a.k.a. Scully Girl, with a review of the Stargate episodes, which I thought they're both pretty good. The SG-1 episode, I thought, was a little bit better than the Atlantis one. Atlantis was kind of offbeat, I thought, but all right. And then at the end of the program will be Ken Gold of MediaBoulevard.com. He's going to be on to talk about some news from the Comic-Con in San Diego that has not been widely reported, as well as an update on Media Boulevard. And also they have launched a message board in the honor of this program. So I thank them very much. And a quite a nice write-up about the subject to discussion. So we thank them. And before we get to the news to you, I want to talk about, first of all, it's been in the USA Today. We had the, of course, the headlines about the top of the page about MySpace having some growing pains, how competitors are trying to capture edge-hungry networkers. And also about the morning after pill closer to wider sales. Apparently there's going to be a morning after pill that will be sold over the counter. So that's interesting. And also I talk about El Fidel Castro having surgery, and his brother temporarily has taken office. His brother Raul has taken office as president as Fidel recovers. And I show the people in Little Havana in Miami celebrating that Fidel is going underneath the knife. And also I talk about the immediate escalation reportedly in the works. Apparently the battle between Israel and Hezbollah is ratcheted back up again after the ceasefire is going to run out in the ceasefire. And also to talk about the illegal violent teen fight clubs that face police crackdown. They have a picture of two teenagers slug it out while others watch on a field in a high school in Arlington, Texas. The picture's from a video, Agtown's Fights Number 2, which is being sold on the internet. And also talk about the Mel Gibson baloney. It says the Gibson scandal gains scrutiny. So he's apologized now 2 days in a row for his actions and what he said. I was watching this trailer all week about the All in the Family movie is coming out, and I thought, geez, Mel Gibson does a good job as the bigoted Archie Bunker, I thought. But that's my little shot at Gibson. And another one was he drinking Manischewitz when he was pulled over? I don't know. Somebody else mentioned that, and I said, I don't know. So we'll have to dig further into that. And what else we have in here? A little article I mentioned when I go through the news. Anyway, of course, the Las Vegas Review-Journal, our one and only paper in this town of a million plus, or 2 million plus, and we have one newspaper, but a refuse ordinance might be revised about recycling. They're going to try and ratchet up the recycling efforts here in Clark County, which is where Las Vegas is located. And talk about the media being cited for feeding the homeless. The Mayor Goodman, our gin-swilling mayor, The city passed an ordinance banning people from serving giving food to the homeless in city parks. And apparently, a radio station traffic reporter and her on-air sidekick were passing out donuts at a park. I wonder if they're handing them out to the police or not. Marking the first enforcement of the ordinance since it went into effect. So they're battling over that. And again, the Review Journal, the RJ as we call it, it talks about Fidel Castro, as well as Israel says no ceasefire. So anyway, so we'll move on to the news to you. And the first one is from today, Monday, actually from Monday. How'd this get mixed up? Anyway, but pre-war intelligence, the report on pre-war intelligence, I seem to have that right here in my formerly nicotine-stained fingers. It's blank, or is it whitewashed? There is no pre-war intelligence report, and they say it's not going to come out till after the election. I mean, give me a break. This is ridiculous. The Republican-led committee, which agreed in February 2004 to write the report, has yet to complete its work. Just two of the five planned sections of the committee's findings are fully drafted and ready to be voted on by members, according to Democratic and Republican staffers. Committee sources involved with the report, who spoke on the condition of blah, blah, and anonymity, says they are working hard to complete it. Oh, yeah, right. Senator Pat Roberts, but disputing Pat Roberts, they said that they had started almost from scratch in November after Democrats staged their protest. I don't know. And Senator Pat Roberts said 9 months ago that his committee was nearly done with the report on U.S. pre-war intelligence on Iraq. So there was no pre-war intelligence. Give me a break. And also we had this from today. Top Republican asks Bush to push for immediate Lebanon ceasefire. This is from Sunday, Senator Chuck Hagel. It's nice to see the Republicans turn on one another. It's real nice. It's timed just well. It's August, September, October. We've got three more months. He said the sickening slaughter on both sides must end now. President Bush must call for an immediate ceasefire. He says this madness must stop, says Senator Hagel, who was also a potential candidate in 2008. Hagel said the U.S. link to Israel was a special and historic one, but it need not and cannot be at the expense of Arab and Muslim relationships. GOP's Chuck Hagel said Iraq is an absolute replay of Vietnam as well. So he's really blasting away there. Good for him. And I'll say something here about George Bush, President Bush. He said he went to his physical, and they say he's gained 5 pounds. It's because he's full of it. That's why he's gained all the weight. He's full of it. And also from today, from Washington, Senate Democrats are reserving $25 million for ads. And flush with cash, the Senate Democrat campaign organization has reserved more than $25 million worth of television advertising time for the fall. The bulk of it aimed at toppling Republican incumbents in Ohio, Missouri, and Pennsylvania. Under the direction of Senator Charles Schumer, the DSCC has shattered fundraising records and far eclipsed its Republican counterpart in filling their account. In recent federal reports, the Democratic Committee said it had $37.7 million in the bank as of June 30th. The Republican committee, chaired by Elizabeth Dole, had only $19.8 million. So that's excellent news. Excellent news. And also Tuesday, also they had the report today that the Democrats are all on one side about Iraq. They passed a resolution or something, or sent a letter to Bush asking him if they could he can start drawing down on the troops in Iraq. So it's nice to see they're all on the same page for once on something. So, and also from today, a House bill seeks to rescind Iraq war authorization. So far, 22 House members, all of them Democrats, who have been leading figures in an all-out in the Out of Iraq movement, have signed on to the Iraq War Powers Repeal Act of 2006. This is introduced by Representative Lynn Woolsey. Woolsey's bill would declare that the United States has been engaged in an occupation of Iraq. Wow. For more than 3 years since President Bush's May 1, 2003 pronouncement that major combat operations in Iraq have ended. That's good. They're turning on his words against him. This has weakened America militarily and economically, diminished its role in the world, and provoked a bloody and ongoing civil war in Iraq. In the stating, it is U.S. policy to end the occupation. The bill would rescind the resolution pushed through the Congress in the run-up to the 2002 midterms. They originally authorized Bush to commit the American forces to Iraq. It's become very clear that we are not in war, Woolsey explained last week. We're occupying Iraq, and the president never came to us and asked for us for permission. So interesting. Very good. And also from today, we had Democratic leaders. This is about, I was talking about, asked Bush to redeploy troops in Iraq, from MSNBC. Leading congressional Democrats, after months of division over Iraq, have called on President Bush to begin a phased redeployment of troops by the end of the year, a unified statement signaling they have concluded that the war could hurt Republicans in the midterm elections. The letter called on American forces in Iraq to make a transition to a more limited mission dealing with counterterrorism and training and logistical support of Iraq security forces. Absolutely. I've said that before. You know, pull them back, have our troops line the borders and also watch the oil fields and let the Iraqis, you know, slaughter each other. Why are we in the middle of all this mess? We had four more troops killed yesterday. You know, ridiculous. In the interest of American national security, our troops and our taxpayers, $500 billion later, the open-ended commitment in Iraq that you have embraced cannot and should not be sustained, in the letter dated July 30th. It was signed by a dozen Democratic leaders, including Pinky Reid of Nevada and Nancy Pelosi. Mr. President, simply staying the course in Iraq is not working, the Democrats wrote. We need to take a new direction. We believe these recommendations comprise an effective alternative to the open-ended commitment, which is not producing the progress in Iraq we would all like to see. So, amen. It's about time. It's about time to get on the same page together. And I also read somewhere they're going to swift boat that patriot Jack Murtha as well. So, man, it's pathetic when the Republicans do that. And also we had this from Monday, new maximum security jail to open at Guantanamo Bay. Far from winding down, the controversial U.S. detention center is expanding. It's from the independent newspaper of the U.K. The controversy over the U.S.-run detention center at Guantanamo Bay is to erupt anew with confirmation by the Pentagon that a new permanent prison will open in the Cuban enclave in the next few weeks. Yeah, what is this? I mean, first he says, you cannot believe a word Bush says, because he says one thing, I like to see it closed, we're going to be, you know, blah, 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 and then all of a sudden they're building this maximum high-tech prison in Guantanamo Bay. Same thing with Iraq. And we're not in there permanently. Then what the hell are these bases that you're building in the southern part of the country for? You know, they're building a Disneyland there or what? You know, and that huge embassy, it was 126 acres and sprawling buildings and everything else. Unless it's timeshares. I think we're building timeshares there in Iraq, huh? And let's see. It's called Camp 6, the state-of-the-art maximum security jail built by a Halliburton subsidiary. Will be able to hold 200 prisoners. The $30 million two-story block was due to open at the end of September. This development will refuel the controversy about the jail, which still holds 450 prisoners from President Bush's war on terror. Campaigners pointed to Mr. Bush's claim earlier this year that he would like to close Guantanamo. Just weeks after he made his comments in June, the Supreme Court ruled that the administration system for trying prisoners using military tribunals breached United States and international law. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And also for Monday, from Ireland, the Irish refused bombs sent to Prestwick Airport. This is the Ireland standing up. See, it's like it gets in this Lebanon, Hezbollah and Israeli disaster. You know, and Condoleezza Rice goes over there for no reason at all, just to, you know, look like we're doing something. You know, and then, we're dropping Israel's dropping U.S.-made bombs on, poor Lebanon's heads, Lebanese heads over there in Lebanon. They said, if we're going to go over there and try and broker a ceasefire, we have to take the higher ground. And as soon as the war started, we should have stopped resupplying Israel. Nope. We should have said, nope, we're going to stop this until this calms down so we can negotiate and have a higher moral standing. But oh no. And what else? Bombs destined to be used by Israel are being flown via Scotland only because the Irish government refused to allow them to land on its soil. Scotland on Sunday can reveal... Scotland on Sunday, must be the newspaper, can reveal that after the conflict in Lebanon began 3 weeks ago, Ireland turned down a United States request for planes carrying 600-pound so-called bunker busters to refuel at Shannon Airport in County Clare. The use of Prestwick triggered a furious diplomatic row last week after it emerged that the U.S. had broken aviation rules by failing to notify Britain about the flights. I mean, this is arrogance. We just do whatever the hell we want. You know, we rendition prisons, jails, who knows, fly the planes in whatever the hell we want and torture these people, you know. The row is intensifying this weekend as two further American planes carrying hazardous material to Tel Aviv land at the airport. I mean, yeah. But anyway, and then also to kind of break in the mood with this joke from Jay Leno. He said humanitarian aid in the U.S. has begun arriving in Lebanon. The U.S. government sent 10,000 medical kits, 20,000 blankets, $30 million in cash. And today, the people of New Orleans says they did what? So I thought that was kind of funny. Yeah. And also Monday, we had the from the Washington Post, crisis could undercut Bush's long-term goals. With each new scene of carnage in southern Lebanon, outrage in the Arab world and Europe has intensified against Israel and its prime sponsor, and raising the prospect of a backlash resulting in a new Mideast quagmire for the United States, according to regional experts, blah, 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 diplomats and former U.S. officials. It says, although the United States has urged Israel to use restraint, it also strongly defended the military assault as a reasonable response to Hezbollah rocket attacks. An analyst says that if the war drags on as appears likely, it could leave the United States more isolated than any time since the Iraq invasion 3 years ago, and hindered in its foreign policy goals, such as shutting down Iran's nuclear program and spreading democracy around the world. Richard Haass, who was President Bush's first-term State Department policy plan director, said the arrows are all pointing in the wrong direction. The biggest danger in the short run is it just increases frustration and alienation from the United States and the Arab world. Not just the Arab world, but in Europe and around the world. People get a daily drumbeat of suffering in Lebanon. This will drive up anti-Americanism to new heights. So there you go, right there. Yeah, it's like that, was it, the president of Lebanon, the prime minister, told Condoleezza Rice, don't bother coming here, you know. So anyway. And also from Sunday from Baghdad, an audit finds the United States hid cost of Iraq projects. That's why we need oversight. That's why we got to get the Democrats, have got to get a control of the House in November, because you can put checks on this stuff. Oversight of this damn spending in Iraq, it's out of control. I mean, it says the State Department agency in charge of the $1.4 billion in reconstruction money in Iraq used an accounting shell game to hide ballooning cost overruns on its projects there, and knowingly withheld information on schedule delays from Congress. Now, isn't that against the law? A federal audit released Friday has found, called the United States Agency for International Development, or AID, the agency administrators foreign aid projects around the world. It has been working in Iraq on reconstruction since shortly after the 2003 invasion. What else is going on here about this? Children's Hospital that Barbara Bush was pounding the drums about. Big cost overruns on that. The hospital's construction budget was $50 million. By April this year, Bechtel, which is building it, has told the aid agency that because of escalating costs for security and other programs, the project could actually cost $98 million to complete. Isn't that amazing? But, and here it is, where they hide it now, but in an official report to Congress that month, the agency was reporting the hospital project costs $50 million. The rest was reclassified as overhead or indirect costs, according to a contracting officer at the agency, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this is the same crap they pull when with the money for the war in Iraq. You know, oh, you want a bridge fund. You want a $50 million bridge fund, which you're not supposed to know about. And they come back for, you know, $100 billion more, which is off the budget, so... Horrible, horrible. The people that don't have enough of this, you know, to boot them all out in November, I don't know what's going to take. Also Monday, the House approves minimum wage wage increase. Republicans muscled the first minimum wage increase in a decade through the House early Saturday after pairing it with a cut in inheritance taxes on multi-million-dollar estates. See, that's going to kill it right there, because this is ridiculous here. We're cutting tax. We got deficit and debts soaring through the roof. What they're doing, they're going to cut taxes on inheritance taxes. I mean, multi-million dollars. I mean, all your multi-million dollars, you can't afford to pay the taxes on your inheritance? I mean, what is this? Combining the two issues provoked protests from Democrats and was sure to cause problems in the Senate, where the minimum wage initiative was likely to die at the hands of Democrats opposed to the costly estate tax cuts. The Senate is expected to take up the legislation next week. Still, GOP leaders saw combining the wage and tax issues as their best chance for getting permanent cuts to the estate tax, a top GOP priority fueled by intense la 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 la, yeah, as well as by special business owners and super wealthy families such as the Waltons, heirs to the Walmart fortune. I mean, come on. It's worth billions and billions of dollars. What do they need this tax cut for? I have no idea. Boehner, John Boehner said, remember him? He's the one that was passing out tobacco lobby checks on the House floor years ago. He said, this is the best shot we've got, and we're going to take it. Pathetic. Pathetic. And also from Sunday, from the New York Times, Frank Rich, he's asking why the television networks canceled the war in Iraq. The specter of defeat is not the only reason Americans have switched off Iraq. The larger issue is that we don't know what we, or more specifically, the 135,000 brave and vulnerable American troops are fighting for. In contrast to the Israel Hezbollah war, where the stakes for the combatants and American interests are clear, the war in Iraq has no rationale to keep it afloat on television or anywhere else. It's a big, nightmarish story, all right, but the one that lacks the threat of a coherent plot. The latest American plan for victory is to reposition our troops by putting more of them in the crossfire of Baghdad's civil war. It is tantamount to treating our troops as if they were deck chairs on the Titanic. That's pretty brutal. Even if the networks led with the story every night, what Americans would have the stomach to watch? Yeah, I don't know. We're all getting sick of this Iraq business. Also, Sunday, they had, 46 people were kidnapped earlier yesterday or today, this morning. Also, this from the Hezbollah-Israel war. Lebanon oil slick, supposed to be the worst environmental disaster in the Mediterranean's history. The Mediterranean is threatened by its worst ever environmental disaster after Israel's bombing of a power plant in Lebanon sent thousands of tons of fuel gushing into the sea. Now, where is this being reported? Nowhere. Up until now, 10 to 15,000 tons of heavy fuel oil have spilled out into the sea. Israel's bombing of the power station in Jaya 2 weeks ago. It's without doubt the biggest environmental catastrophe that the Mediterranean has known, and its risks have terrible consequences, not only for our country, for all the countries of the Eastern Mediterranean. So this is unbelievable. And the spill now affecting 70 kilometers or 40 miles of Lebanon's 220-kilometer-long coast. A third of its coastline, beaches and rocks are covered in black sludge, which has reached the famous tourist town of Byblos, north of Beirut. If nothing is done, not only will currents flowing towards the north mean that one-third of Lebanon's coastline will be hit, but also Cyprus, Syria, Turkey, Greece, and even Israel. So what a disaster that is, you know. And everyone from David Letterman in Washington, President Bush hosted the American Idol finalists in the Oval Office. And he goes, well, sure, there's not really anything else going on. So that's pretty good, too. That's pretty good. And yeah, holding the American Idol contestants, unbelievable. And what's this? Sean's bailing again. Who is that? Oh, sci-fi and the Johns in there. And also from Sunday, the New Mexico governor, America needs a new realism. This is from Bill Richardson. America needs a new realism in its foreign policy and a concerted push for energy independence to safeguard national security. New Mexico governor Bill Richardson, a former U.N. ambassador, said Saturday in the Democrats' response to the presidential address on Saturday and the radio address. He said, what the Bush administration has failed to understand, this is absolutely true, that while diplomacy without power is weak, power without diplomacy is blind. Richardson said, and that blah, blah, blah. Richardson pointed to fighting between Israel and Hezbollah militants, escalating violence in Iraq, the stalemate with North Korea over its missile and nuclear programs, and rising oil prices is evident the world around us is on the verge of spiraling out of control. If we would have had a permanent Mideast envoy in the region, we would have been in a better position to disarm Hezbollah and protect Israel and implement a concurrent ceasefire along with a legitimate international peacekeeping force on the ground. That's brilliant right there. I agree. You know, they're trying to find somebody that's, they want somebody who's got stature in that part of the world. I don't know if it's going to be Colin Powell or Clinton or Carter or all three. I keep saying send all three of them over there because they're all loved. Carter's loved because of the Camp David Accords and his election monitoring over that part of the world. Powell is respected. Well, he's tainted because of the Iraq business, but he's still pretty well respected. And then, of course, Clinton. They love Clinton over there. So send them all over there, you know. And what else about the realism? He says, we are Democrats and we stand for diplomacy, not threats. Bridges, not walls. Alliances, not isolation, he said. And he also called for direct U.S. talks with North Korea and Iran, objecting that the Bush approach has been to outsource our diplomacy. So, That's brilliant right there. I'm starting to like him now more and more. And as I read, and as he's saying what I like, I'll like him more. And also from John Stewart, he said, another day in the Middle East, obviously the ceasefire fell through. Talks fell apart. They lasted about 2 hours. Even the OJ jury managed to meet longer than that. So that's from John Stewart of The Daily Show. And also from Sunday from CNN, it says 6 for 06. The congressional Democratic leaders previewed 6 policy themes Thursday the party will promote in the coming months as it tries to wrest control of the Congress, the House, and Senate from the Republicans in November. I said, I don't want both of it, because we've seen how the Republicans are when they're drunk with power. The Democrats will be just like that. Just give us one House, that way we can keep everybody in check, and they'd have to force compromise. Under the overarching banner, A New Direction for America, Democrats said that they are better equipped to provide real security, better jobs, access to college, energy independence, affordable health care, and retirement security. Nancy Pelosi described it as a list of deliverables that can happen, God willing, she says, if Democrats take back Congress. The first order of business, she said, would be to enact recommendations put forward by the 9/11 Commission. So Republicans dismissed the pledge as an election-era stunt. See, I remember the contract with America was a few years back, and I don't see any similarities there at all. Still, the Democrats were bullish on the prospect of taking back the House and Senate majorities, but refused to make any predictions about what gains they would make in November. And Rahm Emanuel, and he said, 100 days out, I would rather be us than them. And he's in charge of the Congressional Campaign Committee for the Democrats. He also accused his counterpart, Tom Reynolds, the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee, of sitting on internal polling data because it spelled trouble for GOP candidates. We can only hope. We can only hope. And also from Sunday from the USA Today website, usatoday.com, Bush's down-home casual style, both a blessing and a curse. His aides say Bush likes to show a lighter side, taking the edge off of weighty matters that come with his job. Some critics, though, say some of these moments demonstrate lack of seriousness. For example, Bush's recent trip to Europe to visit German Chancellor Angelina Merkel and meet with the world leaders in Russia at the G8 summit, he could be heard cursing over a live microphone, talking longingly about slicing the pig at a barbecue in his honor, and gave an impromptu neck massage to a startled Merkel that was seen around the world via the internet. Tony Snow said the president believes in putting people at ease so that you can have a candid conversation. I don't know. He's turned out to be as useless as McClellan was at the White House spokesman BS. And Saturday from Reuters, United States plans $4.6 billion in Mideast arms sales. So how can we be merchants of peace when we're also merchants of death with these weapons? You know, I don't understand this at all. The Bush administration spelled out plans on Friday to sell $4.6 billion of arms to moderate Arab states, including battle tanks worth as much as $2.9 billion to protect critical Saudi infrastructure. Oh, who cares about Saudi Arabia, for crying out loud? You know, they've done actually nothing for us, you know. The hell with them, I say. You know, the announcement came 2 weeks after the administration said it would sell Israel its latest supply of JP-8 aviation fuel, valued up to $210 million to help Israeli warplanes keep peace and security in the region and drop bombs and missiles on the innocent Lebanese women and children. That was me putting it in there, but I mean, this is nonsense. This is just ridiculous. You know, stop these damn arms sales to Israel until this get a ceasefire, and a ceasefire can happen with a snap of a finger. All he's got to do, Bush has got to pick up the phone and call over there, and they can end it right there. Just delay tactics, just to buy them time so they could push further and further into Lebanon. I mean, come on. And they'd say Syria is ratcheting up their troops, their army, so I don't know. United States also rushed a delivery precision-guided bombs requested by Israel after launching its airstrikes against Hezbollah figures in Lebanon 17 days ago. And the newly proposed sales to Arab states, UH-60M Black Hawk helicopter gunships worth $808 million would go to the United Arab Emirates, while AH-64 Apache helicopters worth as much as $400 million would go to Saudi Arabia. Bahrain would also get Black Hawk helicopters valued at $252 million. Jordan would even get some upgrades, 156 million upgrades to 1,000 of its blah, 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 I can't even read it, armored personnel carriers. The $2.9 billion Saudi deal involves the sale of 58 older generations. I mean, come on, people. You know, this is crazy. And also from Jay Leno, a Tomahawk cruise missile fell off a truck in the Bronx this week. A cruise missile, isn't it unbelievable? You know what that means? There are now more weapons of mass destruction in the Bronx than there are in Iraq. Very good, very good, very good. And also Saturday, Rove, Karl Rove, blasts journalists' role in politics. Presidential advisor Karl Rove said Saturday that journalists often criticize political professionals because they want to draw attention away from the corrosive role their own coverage plays in politics and government. He's just sour grapes because, you know what, they're raking him over the coals over this Valerie Plame business, and they've uncovered all this BS with the administration. So he's just crying. If it's the other way around, he'd have no problem with journalists. Just because they dig up some dirt, you know, all hell's breaking loose, right? And also Congress to adopt Congress to adopt scaled down rules on lobbying. So apparently they are unable to agree on major lobbying and ethics legislation. Senate and House leaders have made plans to adopt vastly scaled down versions of its measures as part of the rules that lawmakers can claim they have responded to recent congressional scandals. That's part of this USA Today thing I was going to mention, that apparently they're leaving on a month-long vacation. This is the do-nothing Congress. You know, they take more time off, you know, than any other Congress since Truman. You know, as I said, it's like they set up the, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean. She called them the Pirates of the Potomac, you know. And a leader would be, instead of the Johnny Depp character, be Cheney leading the, you know, with his shooting everybody. Congress says, despite several issues still on the agenda, Congress goes on break. Unfinished. They have yet to figure out what we're going to do with illegal immigration. Right now they're doing this, you know, traveling circus act, going from town to town, you know, who cares. And also they're doing about pension reform. They're trying to shore up the pension reform business, too, because the airlines are all going belly up. It says the legislation is urgent for workers at Delta, Northwest, and other airlines that have threatened to terminate pension plans. And also government spending. We know government spending has gone crazy through the roof. And I want to increase also the minimum wage, which is nonsense. They tied it to the cuts in the estate taxes. Lobbying reform, which is blew up in this Jack Abramoff business, that's going out the window. Identity theft, also energy. They're trying to do something with the energy bill to control the price of gas. Nothing they're doing. They're not doing nothing. So I think with that, we'll bring on Michael J.W. Stickings from the Reaction blog. And Michael J.W. Stickings, are you there, sir? Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. You know, I think I should have theme music in other areas of my life as well.
Really?
It's extremely satisfying.
There you go.
If you want to show up at work in the morning, there should be theme music to herald my arrival.
Well, you're newly engaged, right?
I am.
You can play that when you come into the bedroom, you know?
That's not a bad idea. I'll run that by her later. Work something out here.
You just attach like a little laser thing as soon as you pass by it, bam, the music goes.
That's a great idea.
That's hilarious. You should do
that. I'm going to spend the next few weeks working on this.
I wonder her reaction is going to be, but I'm not playing off your blog's name, but you know.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, so how you been?
Not too bad, too bad.
Yeah, I mean,
like everyone else, sort of, deeply submerged in the crisis in Lebanon, but... Yeah. We discussed this last time I was on. We basically spent the entire half hour discussing it, and I mean, I think it warrants that kind of attention. I was thinking today, sort of a science fiction comparison, more and more this sort of seems like the Kobayashi Maru from Star Trek II, that it doesn't matter what happens, it's going to end badly.
Yeah.
There just doesn't seem to be a way out of this right now.
No. I don't understand. Bush can pick up the phone and end this, you know, right away. All he's got to do is call Israel, and he can, you know, they can still stop, you know, because we're resupplying them. If we stop resupplying them and Bush gets on the phone, he'll stop with the snap of a finger, you know?
That's right. I don't know if you heard this today, but and I just blogged about this a few minutes ago, but the Saudi ambassador to Washington, Turki Al-Faisal, criticized Bush for a lack of follow-through. For essentially not doing enough to end the to use sort of diplomatic efforts to end this conflict, and it's very rare, of course, that Saudi Arabia criticizes the U.S. But this has happened. I think that's telling that I mean, you know, Bush sent rice over to Beirut last week. Nothing seemed to come of that. The U.S. has allegedly given the green light to Israel. Look where that's gotten us. I don't know. I mean, I mentioned this last time, but I think because the U.S. is so bogged down in Iraq and because it has no credibility left in the international community, mm-hmm. you know, here you have the world's superpower, supposedly a power, you know, a power for sort of moral good in the world
mm-hmm.
that is simply impotent, that has, in a sense, self-castrated itself.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that is so impotent that it can't step in now when it should, when it must, to try to resolve this somehow. And so who can step in? There really is no one who can step. The UN can't step. I mean, who is it?
Somebody else said that he's going to have to appoint somebody to go over there that's respecting that part. I don't know if it's going to be, like I said, mentioned Colin Powell. You know, some areas in that part of the world have problems with him over the Iraq business, but maybe Clinton or Carter, he's going to have to send somebody. He's got somebody. Condoleezza Rice is useless. I mean, say she's over there playing the piano while they're dropping bombs on him. You know, it's her idea of resolving the crisis to play a piano recital over there. It's just like, what is she doing? You know, And then the Lebanon's prime minister told her to stay away, you know, basically to tell her to shove it, you know, because they don't want her false. Oh, we're sorry, people are getting killed, but Israel's dropping our bombs on your heads, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you just go back to the previous administrations. I mean, you know, I'll even give some credit to George H.W. Bush. I mean, there's nothing to say that someone like James Baker couldn't go over as an envoy and try to resolve this. I mean, he has a... You know, I mean, he was sort of the point man building the coalition for the first Gulf War. So, I mean, there's nothing to suggest he can't go over and try to get the different sides talking to each other.
Well, he might be. Maybe it's a combination of him and Clinton or Carter, or, you know, send as many people as it takes to go over there and resolve it, huh?
Well, send Bush and Clinton. I mean, they seem to get along with each other, and they helped out with Katrina and the tsunami, and hey. Maybe that's what they can do. I don't know.
Maybe you can send Mel Gibson over there. Huh?
Yeah, there you go. Well, the Jews start all the wars in the world, right? So
the unpassion of the Christ, you know.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I hear he's starring. He's starring in Lethal Weapon 5, and it's his mouth, huh?
But, yeah. So something tells me this could be Mel Gibson's tipping point. You know, I think everyone kind of accepted. Oh, you know, okay, he's a little bit crazy. You know, he's not going to make Lethal Weapon movies anymore. He's only going to make these, you know, sort of foreign language religious epics. It's an ugly situation.
I think his career is going to be at such a point now, he'll be taking over his principal building on Saved by the Bell, the way things are going, you know?
Well, probably. I mean, ABC pulled his documentary on the Holocaust.
Although,
I actually think that might be an interesting thing to watch now, just to look for sort of anti-Jewish subtext.
Yeah, that's...
Actually, an interesting story that is reported in the Toronto Star today. He was up years and years ago filming Mrs. Soffel. I can't remember who else was in that movie. Anyway, he was filming that movie in Toronto, and he was actually arrested for drunk driving, and his license was taken away from him by a Canadian judge. So, I mean, you know, he has a history of this, and he may have, you know, he may be born again, or he may have had some kind of revelation, but, you know, to a certain extent, this is the same old Mel Gibson. It just come out now, clearly. And I don't know. The last time I checked, alcohol sort of makes you tell the truth.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think this is what happened here.
Exactly. I don't want to be too hateful. I was told that on a message board that when I talk politics, I get too hateful.
Really?
I don't think
it's like a Mel Gibson fan club you seem to be annoying?
No, I think it's about President Bush. I'm the leader of his
all
fan
right,
club.
All right. All right, well, let's leave Mel alone. He's got too many problems now.
Would you hear about Bush? He went to his physical, and they said he's fine. He gained 5 pounds. I said it's because he's full of it. He's got constipation. He's full of it. He's been full of it for 6 years.
He has. Absolutely. Well, you know, if he spent like half as much time reading as working out, we might be in better shape.
Ooh, Bush?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's got to read nursery rhymes and coloring books, I think. I don't know.
That's true.
I don't know. And then I don't know if you've been they're going to swift boat Jack Murtha. I don't know if you saw that anywhere. Apparently the swift boaters are going after the Patriot Jack Murtha.
Yeah, well, you know, the Patriot Jack. Well, I mean, they went after a former senator from Georgia whose name is escaping me here.
I know he may not. The poor guy.
The poor guy with no legs and one arm.
Yeah, they try and paint him as anti-military or
right,
anti.
He objected to something in the Homeland Security bill. Anyway, I apologize. I don't remember the name.
I'm drawing a blank on it, too. Yeah. I know him, you know, and he's replaced by Saxby Chambliss.
Saxby Chambliss, yeah, yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, swift boating is the way they go, right? I mean, it's funny how you know, a couple of years ago, no one knew what a swift boat was.
Mm-hmm.
And now a swift boat has become sort of a defining verb in the American lexicon. It wouldn't surprise me if some language association, you know, named it Word of the Year or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's anyone they want, right? I mean, they you know, they'll swift boat Martha because he's, you know, because he offers a credible alternative, and you know they're swift boating the gubernatorial candidate in Ohio because he's a credible candidate, and I mean this is what they do, right? I mean the Republican spin machine is awfully good. You know, I think it goes back to the days of Watergate, if you've seen All the President's Men, when, you know, one of the characters refers to it as rat-fucking, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
If I may use that word
on
your show.
Yes, on the Internet, yes.
yeah, I mean, this is what they do, right? And I'm not saying Democrats are terribly clean, but I just don't see Democrats going after Republicans the way Republicans go after Democrats.
Yeah, Max Cleland, yes. The John in the chat room, yes. Thank you for my brain freeze here. Thank you very much. Actually, yeah, the guy
lost both legs,
yes,
and one arm,
yeah,
and somehow he's a traitor.
I don't know.
When you say it over and over to yourself, it just seems more and more absurd.
Yeah, that's Rove, and I just wish Rove was indicted, and it would take him out of the picture. I mean, disgusting way these Republicans, you know, they throw all their scruples to the side to tear somebody. I wish we could kind of, the Democrats, we can co-opt the swift boaters and have them go after John McCain and watch all hell break loose. How dare you? He was held prisoner for 100, how many years? 10 years, where it was?
Several years.
50
yeah.
years? Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Don't forget they did swift boat him in 2000.
Oh, yeah, Bush did that,
right?
Yes.
It was sort of the Karl Rove, Ralph Reed campaign in South Carolina to discredit him, and even someone like McCain, which makes McCain's sort of conversion to a Bush supporter all the more troubling. But no, I mean, you know, it's one thing to go after someone like McCain. I mean, that just seems reprehensible to me, and yet they'll do it to anyone, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, see, McCain, I lost all respect for him because he's really kissing ass to Bush and all that. I mean, it just drives me insane. I mean, after everything they did to him, he's, yeah, you know, kissing up to him. You know, he's grabbed his ankles for Falwell. Yeah, I mean, come on, you know.
Well, you know, and it makes me wonder. Maybe someone like Hillary will be a good candidate in 08 because she's been swift voted already.
Yeah,
it sort of reached a point where what more can they say about her?
That's
you know,
true.
All the dirt has come out.
Yeah,
well, you know, everything just seems like sort of overkill at this point, sort of piling on, right?
Yeah, I'm sure Falwell will crank up the sequel to the Clinton Chronicles. You know, although he said he had nothing to do with it, but I remember him selling them off his website, though.
Oh, I'm sure they'll find something. They'll imply, you know, they'll imply as Ann Coulter did recently, that she's a lesbian, and that not that there's anything wrong with that, but you know that's what the story, and they'll you know go after her marriage to Bill, and they'll. They'll find something. They'll resurrect the whole, you know, shady land deals in Arkansas scandal. They'll do whatever it takes. But, I mean, it's interesting because she's sort of been through it. So I wonder if, you know, she might somehow be able to escape it. Whereas, you know, you take someone like John Edwards, whom the New Republic recently anointed as the new anti-Clinton, sort of a viable opponent to Clinton. You know, he's still very clean, and you just wonder, you know, how Republicans would tear him apart if he were to run.
Well, it's you know, the rip in the Hillary, yet they forget about John McCain's connection with the banking, the banking scandal years ago, the Keating Five. You know,
yeah.
Forget all about that. Oh,
conveniently forget that. Yeah.
Oh, forget. Oh, how dare you bring that up? That's in the past. He's paid for his whatever he's did. Oh, it was just a minor indiscretion. Blah blah blah. Yeah, Hillary. You know, she's a bitch and everything else, right?
Yeah. Well, look. I mean, this just the mind boggles. I mean, I go back to 2004, for instance, where I mean, I realize that Kerry was not a great candidate, but you know, here's someone with three Purple Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone who went over was on the front lines in Vietnam, and acted from all accounts heroically. Bush avoided the conflict entirely.
Mm-hmm.
was likely an alcohol addict, if not more, proceeded to run companies into the ground in Texas. I was constantly bailed out by his daddy's friends. Mm-hmm. Was essentially given a piece of the Texas Rangers. Was bought out at a huge price by Republicans in Texas who wanted him to run for governor so that they could own him. And then he was placed in the White House by very powerful interests. Can anyone really tell? I wish someone would tell me still now, how is it that Bush emerged in 2004 looking better than Kerry?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? When you put those side by side, it makes absolutely no sense at all.
Well, part of it was Kerry's fault because the Swiss voters got ahead of him, and he laid low for those few weeks, you know, after the convention to save money. And I think that was a fatal mistake on his part because those ads just went on and on and on. And the media picked up and they aired them left and right. And he laid low for too long. It was 3 weeks there between Democratic convention and Republican convention. I think it was horrendous. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry to rehash an old battle, but I mean, it just goes to show that, you know, it shouldn't be surprising that they're doing this to Murtha, you know, or that they're generally doing this around the country. And there was a new report today by Billman, who writes a very good blog called Whiskey Bar, that Charlie Cook, one of the great political prognosticators, is suggesting now that this could be a landslide victory for Democrats.
I hope so.
Even the House could go, that all the close races could go Democratic. And I think as we get closer to November, I mean, if there isn't some sort of war started, say, with Iran or Syria before then, or some kind of terrorist attack or something to prop up the Republicans, I mean, the Republicans are going to get dirty.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, faced with that kind of defeat, they're going to get very dirty.
Oh, that's all they know how to do. They dirty election tricks that are in they're in the rule book, you know. And then, that battle at Catherine Harris, they told her that she's pretty much stick a fork in her. She's done, right?
That is one of the greatest stories in American politics right now. I don't know if you have you been following it.
Yes. Yeah. Her campaign is withering away. Ed Rollins left, and now all her operatives have bailed out on her.
Yeah, they've all left. Her poll numbers are plummeting in a race where, you know, the Democrat Nelson is vulnerable, I'd say. And the Republican leadership in Florida wrote a letter to her saying that she couldn't win and she should get out of the race, and they wouldn't support her.
Mm.
And she's staying in. She's one of the most stubborn people in America, it seems. But it's a fun thing. I hope she stays in because I think she deserves a brutal defeat in November.
Yeah, she deserves to get blasted away in that election. You know, I like to see her get beaten up pretty good in the election. A landslide loss. You know, that'll knock the wind out of her sails. You know.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll blame it on I don't know something. She'll blame it on the Democrats, or she'll blame it on the Washington elite, or something. But it'll be nice. I look forward to her concession speech. That's one thing I'm looking forward to. Whatever else happens on election day.
Well, she'll turn on the media and all that and blame it on them or blame it on 2000 or, you know, things like that. Now, I saw I'm on your blog about Joe Lieberman. Edward Copeland's writing about Joe Lieberman. I hate to see the Senate get filled with, you know, really completely to the left-leaning senators. You need a few in the middle to kind of, you know, be the voice, you know, somewhat, I don't know, have a difference of opinions in the Senate.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I don't know if you disagree or not, but I don't know. I mean, I hate to see, you know, all the moderate senators go. You need some common ground somewhere, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Let me, if I can just preface this. This is the first guest post at the Reaction by a blogger named Edward Copeland.
Mm-hmm.
I bring on some guest bloggers, and I have some co-bloggers who contribute. The Creature is great. The Liberal Girl Next Door, who's appeared on your show, mm-hmm. and now Edward Copeland. And I have, you know, Greg Prince and Aspasia, and a lot of really good bloggers. So it's not just me. You know, it's not just. You can get tired of me, so I bring on others. But yeah, he wrote a great piece on Lieberman, arguing why it's time for Lieberman to go. And I don't know. I go back and forth on this. He makes a very compelling case. I don't think Lieberman is all that bad. I mean, I know that sort of puts me at odds with the orthodoxy of the left wing blogosphere. Certainly with Cossacks and the rest of them. I think the problem is that this is a solidly Democratic state, and Democrats argue, in a solidly Democratic state, why shouldn't there be a solidly Democratic senator? Mm. And it isn't just Iraq, it's energy, it's his alliance with Bill Bennett a few years back. there are any number of things he's done to alienate himself from Democrats. What concerns me is that Ned Lamont is not all that a formidable candidate either. I don't know if you saw him. He was on the Colbert Report last night. And, you know, was basically spewing the same old talking points about how it's time to withdraw from Iraq and how, you know, Bush is running the country into the ground. I mean, you know, I think I agree with that. I think you agree with that. But he just seems to lack a certain gravitas, the kind of experience you expect from a senator, I suppose. And, you know, as bad as Lieberman may have been, I mean, he's been on the right side of many other issues.
True.
Women's rights and abortion and
civil rights.
Yeah. I mean, on some very key issues, he signed solidly with his own party. So, you know, my concern here is that this is sort of an effort by some on the left to win a very big victory and assert their power and let everyone know that they can affect very high-profile races. This isn't to say it's not to say that I'm a Lieberman apologist, a Lieberman supporter. I'm really not. I just don't think he's as bad as everyone thinks he is.
Yeah, and I saw on your blog from Sunday about William F. Buckley, the godfather of conservative politics, and he was on, with Thalia Shuras, saying that he think Mr. Bush faces a singular problem, best defined, I think, is the absence of, isn't he supposed to be ill or something? But he can still talk, huh?
He says,
I think, is the absence of effective conservative ideology, with the result that he ended up being very extravagant in domestic spending, absolutely, extremely tolerant by excesses by Congress and in respect of foreign policy, incapable of bringing together such forces as apparently were necessary to conclude the Iraq challenge. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what Democrats say, what Bush's opponents on the left will say, that kind of criticism from Bill Buckley, not just the godfather of American conservatism, but essentially the founder of the modern conservative movement in the United States. You know, the man who in the 50s launched National Review in an effort to establish an alternative to New Deal liberalism. And, you know, I mean, the fact is, he's right. I mean, he's right. I mean, you know, you don't have to know much about conservatism to know that Bush is not a conservative.
No, I mean,
the neoconservative foreign policy experiment is essentially a kind of, you know, an effort to establish American hegemony around the world, and you know, that's certainly not a conservative vision. I mean, a conservative vision would tend to be more isolationist.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, look at the extent to which Bush has grown government.
Oh, unbelievable!
Right? And that's certainly not a conservative ideal. Conservatives generally favor small government.
Yeah,
perhaps.
And the spending
is too small, but still small government.
And the deficit spending. I mean, spending the government, our country, into the poorhouse. Yeah, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
How is a conservative to run up massive debts and saddle future generations with a problem that could be enormous? I mean the again, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but in the percentage of America that is owned by China.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Is disturbing.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, essentially this is a country that is taking out loans.
Mm-hmm. Every day.
And it's taking out some loans from some pretty shady characters. You know, go and find go and find the right person in your neighborhood to borrow some money from. You know, the guy's going to break your legs if you don't pay him back.
Yeah.
What's going to happen 20, 30 years from now when China is truly a power to rival the United States? And this is the legacy that Bush has left. So, well, congratulations.
Yeah, I mean, he's leaving it for whoever's following him. Whoever it is, if it's Hillary, whoever, they got to clean up, you know, in debt and, business, and whoever it is going to clean up the mess in Iraq. You know, and they keep saying, oh, we're not staying there forever. But what are these, if people don't see these bases being built in the southern part of the country, what are those bases for if we're not going to stay there? You know?
Yeah, and I mean, even a lot of this talk, and I refer again to Lamont on the Colbert Report last night. I mean, even all this talk among Democrats that American troops should leave sort of flies in the face of reality right now, because, you know, you can take out the bulk of the forces, but there are still these bases there. And it's not as if American forces will leave the region. How much is this war costing? I mean, you go to some blogs and there's you see the dollar amount just increasing at an extremely rapid rate. I mean, billions and billions of dollars, and it's
there's no end in
sight. It's really not paying for itself the way Wolfowitz said it would, right?
Oh yeah, the oil and the oil will pay for it, and the roses will be thrown at their feet, and free chocolate for everybody. I mean, I don't know. I mean, in Israel, we're gonna end up doing something to help rebuild Lebanon. You can see the writing on the wall now, And then some kind of multinational force. I don't know if the NATO is going to be involved in that. I mean, NATO's got its hands full. First, they're picking up, Bush's disaster in Afghanistan. Now they're running that now, and now they're going to have to end up getting involved in this Hezbollah Israel mess, huh?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it's not quite clear to me what that will mean. I suppose some kind of force, some kind of international force or NATO force along the border. But I guess the question then arises: how long would that force stay there?
Mm.
What kind of a buffer zone does Israel need? It would just be a temporary peace anyway, because there's no way that either side would be able to live with a buffer zone for that long.
Yeah.
I mean, it would just encourage Hezbollah to launch further attacks down the road.
Yeah. Actually, a question from the chat room. I don't know if you've been catching it, but Richard Vigeri, he went out after Bush as well. He was a Reagan Republican. He went after him, saying something about I got the story here somewhere. He's an architect of Reagan's 1980 victory. He said that Tom DeLay single-handedly the primary person responsible for the most expansion of the government since Lyndon Johnson and Bush. We're not here about the war in Iraq. Right here, he opposed the war in Iraq. Vigeri, it's just nation building, and it's just conservatives. True conservatives oppose America going in there, and now that we're in there, I don't know how to get out. So this is Vigeri, it's a Reagan Republican.
Yeah, and he's sort of he was sort of Rove before Karl Rove. He was the man who initiated sort of mail campaigns, as in MIAL, but mail out campaigns to bring in the base to encourage. Voters to get out and no, he's extremely important in the conservative movement. There's no doubt about it. And I mean, it's not surprising. He's more of a Buckley conservative anyway. The one that never put it past the Republicans to rally when they need to. They're very good at that. And if there is some kind of terrorist attack later this year, I'm not suggesting a staged attack, but some kind of attack, or if something happens in Israel or Iran and the U.S. military is called even deeper into action. Again, don't put it by Republicans to rally around that. But there are signs that the Republican movement, the Republican coalition, is coming undone. Peter Beinart had a piece at the New Republic today arguing that Republicans are less united, far less united than Democrats are. And the Democrats are more united than they've been in decades. And that's true, right? The rhetoric, the narrative out there in the media is that Democrats are divided over Iraq. And they are. But if you look at Republicans, they're divided on Iraq, too. Mm-hmm. And they're certainly divided on Iran. And they're certainly divided on Israel. And they're divided on stem cell research and immigration.
And spending. Yeah.
It's not clear that even if there is, some kind of crisis this fall, it's not clear that Republicans will be able to put aside their differences. They're sort of squabbling just as they were in 92. And, if that's the case, it bodes well for Democrats.
Yeah. Well, Michael, we'll let you go. End of our segment with you. We'll bring you back in a few weeks.
A very optimistic note.
Very good.
Pushing on the Democrats in 08.
Absolutely.
Good.
Michael, we'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot.
Right. Have a good night.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Right.
And that was Michael J.W. Stickings of the Reaction Blog, blogspot.com, as well as the John Edwards One America Committee blog. And just a few minutes, we'll be back for our second hour with Jamie, a.k.a. Scully Girl, with our review of the Stargates. And then later will be Ken Gold of Media Boulevard. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Thank you very much. Stay tuned.
ein Punker unterrichtet in der Post. Die Straße sah ihn wie ein Baumänner, wo er alles tat. Er hatte Schulden bei einer Bank, doch ihn liebten alle Frauen. Und jede rief, na komm, rock me Amadeus. Er war Superstar, er war populär, er war so exaltiert, because er hatte Flair. Er war ein Virtuose, war ein Rockidol. Und alles rief, na komm, rock me Amadeus. Und es war irgendwie no plastic money in den Modebanken gegen ihn. Woher die Schulden kamen, war wohl jeder Mann bekannt. Er war ein Mann der Frauen, Frauen liebten seinen Punk. Er war ein Superstar, er war so populär. Er war zu exaltiert, genau das war sein Flair. Er war ein Virtuose, war ein Rocky-Doll. Und alle sucht noch auf der Captain Rock me up,
Las Vegas, Nevada. You're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
And welcome back for the second hour of Subject to Discussion live at LVRocks.com. And once again, I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. You can call me anything you want, just do not call me late for dinner. And thank you for everybody listening to the program live, and as well as thank you for everybody listening to the program on the podcast and everybody in the chat room. I got Chris 1019, 40, GLZ, Net Ranger, Sci Fi, Scully Girl, and the John in there as well. And let's see, I think in a good first hour. You know, I didn't mean to come across as, yeah, I was beat up on the Sci Fi one of the boards because I was being hateful. And I don't know. I mean, come on. I mean, if you don't have, you know, angry about the state of the country and, you know, our involvement in this, you know, world crisis, I mean, you're out of your mind. You know what I mean? It's good to have a little anger. It means you feel what's going on in the world. So, you know, listen to Rush. I mean, he gets mad too, but you know, but so that's part of the game. And I think now we'll go into our Stargate review with Jamie, aka Scully Girl. We'll be right back. Jamie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hard to hear the music.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, the Stargate music was... There we go. Hey, I like that Stargate music.
Like it.
I gotta admit, they have a better theme than the Atlantis show, that's for sure. Huh?
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, you gotta admit, the theme is better than in Atlantis, huh?
Yeah, I still like the Stargate theme better.
Yeah, because the Atlantis one, I don't know, they seem like... I don't know what it's like a... with the the woman singing, it's like it's supposed to be like a mythology type of show, huh?
Yeah, well, at least we got the full credits back now, which is a good thing.
Yeah, well, yeah, I understand why they dropped the credits to begin with. I mean, they want to start the show faster to keep the audience, or what?
I don't know. I heard that they said at first it was supposed to be for more episode time, but then they ended up using it for more commercials. So who knows?
Wonderful. Yeah, that's all they need. More commercials. It already is what? There's, what, 12 minutes of commercials already?
Way too many.
Yeah. So now, what did you think of the Pegasus project, the big crossover episode? I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I liked that they crossed over, and kind of it's funny moments, but also it moved along the mythology pretty well, I thought, so...
Yeah. It's called the Pegasus Project. A lot of people are saying, they're ripping off of the Galactica. What do you think? That's nonsense, huh?
No, it wasn't like that story. At least I didn't think so.
Yeah, nothing to do with the Pegasus, but just they used the name,
Yeah. Well, the point of it was that they wanted to open the super gate and to keep it open so that way they couldn't be dialed by the Ori anymore.
Yeah.
But they needed a stronger connection, obviously, since it's a bigger gate.
Yeah. And then, because I took notes, this is with the threat of the Ori now pressing on the galaxy, SG-1, who returned to Earth from Atlantis 10,000 years ago, right? And
yeah.
Merlin was involved, and then that woman that was on Atlantis, that was supposed to be a hologram, actually she was really an ascendant, right?
Yeah, she was supposed to be Morgan Le Fay, or at least where the stories about her came from. Yeah, they were talking to the hologram, and Daniel needed to find out where the planets were that possibly had the weapon to kill the ancients, and she told him right away, which he was, like, really surprised about, and then he thought that since she knew that maybe Merlin had been back to Atlantis, but she told him that, Weir was the first human back, and he noticed, she said, human, that might be important, so then he realized that she had already been back there because she never left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It wasn't like holograms.
Yeah,
so.
and they brought up, they kind of rehashed some of the things, because when he left the show, he became an ascendant, right?
When Daniel?
Daniel, right, because she said you were one of us, right?
Yeah, but he didn't remember it. So.
Yeah, because she said they washed his memory and everything else. I thought that was pretty good. It kind of went back and kind of reminded everybody, especially those of us who haven't followed it that closely, that, give you some backstory.
Yeah, and she obviously wants to break the rules, too, but... has tried, and if he had never figured it out, they would have found the answer, and no one would have known, and everything would have been good, but he's too smart for his own good sometimes, I think.
Yeah, now, was there any interaction between the two casts that you missed that you wish they would have done?
I don't know so much missed. I'm still most like the interactions between Daniel and Vala, so I'm happy with anything they give.
Really? Well, I like that and then Weir was kind of, integral during that episode as well,
Yeah.
And she kind of came in, she goes, doctor, what's going on? Because she came into the scene where he's screaming up for her to come back, or we're on to you, and all that stuff, and Weir walks in like, what's going on in here,
And then she pretends like she didn't do anything, so.
Yeah, and I thought that was pretty good. And then I like it. And Daniel, when he, in Atlantis, he's like in awe because he's never been there, right?
Yeah, right. Mitchell called it Daniel Disneyland.
Yeah, and... they're sightseeing everything else, and that's interesting because I wonder in a couple of years if SG-1 has to go off the air, would they send him over there to Atlantis?
I would like that. I think that'd be good.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm glad that I know that Richard Dean Anderson is coming back on the 18th,
mm-hmm.
which is good. But I still, I don't know. I don't miss him as much as I used to. I guess. Because I really like their dynamic. I don't.
Yeah, because I said before, I'm not a big follower of SG-1, but I have seen a few of the episodes with Richard Dean Anderson and now with Ben Browder. And I gotta admit, maybe it's because of the Farscape connection. I like that he's on there. He's younger. He'll be on the show for a while. It seems like he's re-energized the whole series, huh?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I mean, I still wish he'd be back, but, it's this year, I don't know, I noticed it less. It's not, doesn't seem it's like that big of a part missing as it was, I guess.
Yeah.
delved into so much other stuff.
And then I like the interplay between Samantha and Rodney. They kind of bantered back and forth. And
oh, yeah, and him thanking her for helping him in his hallucination.
Yeah, and she's trying, she looks at him, she goes, was I naked in there?
It's like partially. that was good. I enjoyed that. And I also liked Mitchell with the orange that he was deathly allergic to to get him to work.
Yeah, and then Shepard gave him the suggestion, give him, you know, citrus. He's got some kind of fear of citrus.
Yeah.
Is that right? I thought that was funny as well. They played against that. And then, I like how they you know, kind of remind everybody he was, you know, he knew Samantha and them from before.
Yeah, because he's appeared a lot in SG-1, too.
Yeah. And then now they said how the Ascendants aren't going to help them now because it's when they left the episode where Daniel said we're in this on our own.
Yeah, but he did, you know, they were telling her that, you know, after they finish off us, they're going to come after the Ancients, so they ought to watch out and help.
Hmm. So that should be interesting. So now, when does Richard Dean Anderson show? Is that next week?
No, it's the 18th of August. It's the 200th episode, and it's called Episode 200. And I actually found out some stuff about it.
Really? What did you find out? Now, the preview was on tonight during, Eureka, right?
Yeah,
did you watch it?
I saw that
really?
As well.
How was it?
I thought it was good. It showed it. It didn't show a whole lot. It showed them, I know, partially at their party with their cake and everything. But from what I found out, it's going to be a continuation of, I think it was the 100th episode, wasn't it, with Wormhole Extreme.
Mm.
And it's going to have Martin. So you didn't see that, so you don't know. They did two episodes with the character Martin Lloyd, who actually was an alien and came to Earth, and his memory was erased, and he didn't remember it, but then he did, and he wrote the screenplay to a TV series. It was about everything on Stargate.
Oh, I know. I remember that. I saw that one where they said, oh, where's, and he went to his house or something like that, right?
There was actually two episodes. Well, this one's a continuation again. They're going to kind of close it up with Wormhole Extreme, and this time they're making a movie because it says that his show was supposedly canceled, but it sold very well on DVD. So they're going to make a movie, and it says that the Air Force believes that the show gives them plausible deniability about the existence of the real program, and it will unfold in a series of fantasy vignettes as SG-1 offers suggestions to augment Martin's already wacky script. And I got that from Gate World. So
really, and then somebody else was saying in the chat room today. It looks like they're rehashing some scenes from Star Trek, huh? I don't know. GLZ says that he could have sworn I saw scenes from the Star Trek: The Original Series and The Next Generation, a la Stargate. So I don't know how's that going to play in, unless it's like the movie or something, huh?
I don't know. Like I said, I don't watch Star Trek, so I have no idea.
I don't know how they're going to do that. Because a lot of people, you know, watching Stargate, you know. Probably now, you have no idea what the original series of Star Trek was all about, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I was born or not. I don't even know when it came out. That's bad.
Yeah, that's kind of... And then, I guess here's a question. How was it, the Wraith, what's his name, Teal'c with the Wraith?
Teal'c with the Wraith?
Wasn't their ship flying over him at the end of the episode?
They saw the Wraith ship blew up when they blew up the Ori ship when they sent out the warheads. Don't think they had... With him.
No, Teal'c was like, in a ship and he saw that. I guess he saw
it when
the ship
exploded. Oh, yeah, he saw the Wraith ship blow up.
Yeah, now the Wraith is an Atlantis villain, right?
Yeah.
So that
was
interesting that now this is the first time they actually acknowledge the other show's villains, right?
Yeah, which was good. But they helped out both shows because they blew up both ships. So now at least, you know, it did something, I guess, for both areas for a while.
Well, you're saying it last week that you wish they would, you know, acknowledge each other's, you know, problems or you know, their villains. So it's just kind of cool because they started to do that now. At least it was last week, you know.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they continued it, but I have a feeling some people won't like it because I know from before reading Stargate magazine, a lot of people were complaining because they put both shows in one magazine, and some of them like Atlantis and don't like SG-1 or the other way around. I mean, I like them both, and I think it's great when they cross over, you know, my opinion. We're like one big show, anyway.
It'd be kind of cool if they find a Stargate on the Galactica. I call it Stargate Galactica, huh?
No? Yeah.
Travel between the three shows.
Hey, you never know.
I don't think they'll go that far, do you?
I don't think they will. Maybe in fanfic. I think that's about it.
That'd be kind of cool to see something like that, done like a fan type of thing. I saw something where some fan, I think it was on a sci-fi board, some fan of Battlestar is going to do a fan, it's Hamilton Steele of the Argus thing. He's going to do like a fan Battlestar Galactica movie or something, some kind of Battlestar-themed movie.
Oh,
from a fan, like they did with, I don't know if you know that, when they did the last Star Wars movie, some fan came up with, made his own Star Wars-based movie.
I didn't know that.
Pretty good. Yeah, it's still on the internet. I don't know. It's called Star Wars? I don't know. New Generation or something like that. He's done it. It's amazing. If you get a chance to look it up, it's amazing. And there's also a Star Trek thing called The New Adventures, and it's a fan project. They rebuilt the original show sets and everything. It's amazing.
That sounds really amazing. Yeah. I've never seen anything to that scale. I saw once some people had made a X-File episode, I know, a long time ago, mm-hmm. called Graceland, my friend showed me. And then they did sort of the same thing, although they still use, I don't know about the show you're talking about, but in this, though, they used the same characters and everything.
Yeah.
It had different actors, but it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Now, people ask about Atlantis. I want to hear about Atlantis. Now, I thought that show was hilarious Friday with the guy from Spin City?
Yeah, I think that's what he's from. Yeah, where he made everybody fall in love with him.
Yeah.
By the stuff that he drank was giving off pheromones or something to that effect, mm-hmm. and everybody was taken, except for Shepard, who had a cold, so I guess that was a good thing.
I liked it, because it was funny, it was one of the lighthearted episodes, and then actually GLZ saying that the Star Trek thing is called New Voyages, yes. Because he's, what was his name, Richard Kind, he was on Spin City, yes, and then the village, he wanted a ship, and then Shepard said, no, you're not getting the ship, and I liked it, it was very comical, oh, you're hurting my feelings, and all that.
Yeah,
and he ended up getting weird with the the pheromones and
thought weird was really funny in that, playing that up.
Yeah, very over the top. Oh my God, no! He'll come around and all that. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, but she was about ready to kill him, I think, near the end.
And then poor Rodney, he fell. And I thought him and Shepard were going to be the two who are going to resolve all this. And
yeah, he fell for it.
Yeah, and he was acting like a puppy. Oh, I'll go get you some water. He took off out of the room.
And then it was funny too, though, how at the end he took it himself to get Shepard to clean his room. I thought that was rather. I could see him doing that. It was in character, but at least he got yelled at for it, I guess.
Yeah, now, what was the thing in the end? He said for Rodney, the camera. He said get the camera out of there. Some footage you saw. He said to get rid of it. Was there footage of Weir and them or what?
I can't remember.
I was watching it.
About.
Well, the last scene when Shepard's talking to Rodney, and he goes...
Yeah, he said something about I thought he just said he was going to go clean his room or something to that effect.
Huh.
I don't know. Maybe I misinterpreted the quote.
But
either way, he used it on Shepard, so...
Yeah. I don't know, because there's something on there. At the end, somebody else was mentioning it to me in an email, that the last scene between... Because Weir and the other doctor, Beckett, said, oh, yeah, get rid of that, Rodney. So I don't know what...
They meant get rid of the all the rest of the medicine.
Oh, that's probably what it was.
That's
okay.
What I got out of it anyway.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. So and then now we have no ratings. I couldn't find ratings for the two shows.
No, I looked on Gate World. It tells up to. I think it's actually what you read last week.
Yeah.
What I found. So.
I don't know why they're so slow with the ratings. I mean, it's terrible. And then actually, a question from the chat. What do you think of Heath Ledger going to play Joker in the next Batman movie? Huh?
Like him, but I don't know about playing Joker.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. They announced that today, and it's also on the sci-fi.com site, that the Heath Ledger, of all people. Now, are they going to call the movie Brokeback Batman, or what? I wonder.
Maybe.
That'd be hilarious. I don't know if they're going to do that or not, but, I mean, Heath Ledger, of all people. I thought maybe Jamie Foxx can pull it off, or who's the other one? Chris Tucker. He might make a good Joker.
Yeah, I could see that. Is this supposed to be still like when Batman's younger,
yeah.
or is it just a remake?
No, Batman, a younger Batman with Christian Bale. They're going to call it the Dark Knight. They're going to call it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, then I don't know. He's not. I've never really seen Heath Ledger be really funny.
That's so. What I'm saying. You need a comedian. Well, I know. No, Jack Nicholson wasn't really a comedian either, but he was able to pull it off. I mean. I don't know. I still like to see like Chris Tucker or something like that play Joker, but
I could see that a little bit more.
Yeah, but I liked both episodes. I mean, I think you needed the Stargate one, Atlantis one, to make, break the humor. Make some humor, because the Pegasus Galaxy one with SG-1 was a little heavy on the drama and all that.
Yeah, and on the mythology a lot too.
Yeah,
so.
and now the next week's episode of Atlantis is it a weird episode or what? I think someone said it's a weird episode.
What I saw, it's about, at least on the preview, it's about Ronan. I guess they left him on a race ship and they need to go get him.
Oh, he gets kidnapped or something, or
yeah, it just says with something like they leave their own on behind or something.
Right. Now, do they do that a lot? And they have a standalone episode, you know, basically with, you know, like one character, like, I don't know, Star Trek Next Generation used to do that. You used to have one character, and the whole episode would be based on the one character.
I wouldn't say so much. Maybe once in a while, but more, I think it's like some scenes, and the rest is kind of interspersed.
Huh. And then KR isn't going to be on it. Did you watch the 4400?
Yes, I did.
Really?
I really enjoyed that. I don't know the character's name, so that's a problem. But about the doctor taking the promycin and giving it to...
Dr. Birkhoff.
Yeah, Birkhoff giving it to... Why can't I think of their names? I had it up. I lost it.
Yeah,
I took it down.
Wait a minute, I got my notes. Hold on.
The main lady.
Yeah, it says Dr. Birkhoff runs through the park being pursued by...
Diana.
By Diana. Haspel Corp. His face is really mangled up by this, was it promycin experiments?
Promycin, yeah, and he's also getting help from, I can't think of her name, but the one who was in Serenity, Summer Glau.
Mm-hmm.
She's injecting it, and they're also injecting it into Diana without her knowing, so she's getting sick. But what I really liked was the ending, because after he's gone through all this and he's become almost invincible, he can heal himself and everything, and he looks really bad, but at the very end, he sheds his skin and he's, you know, perfect. So,
yeah, does that mean that the stuff works or what?
I would say it works, and they're harvesting it, which isn't a good thing either. I don't know who all they're planning on giving it to, but it obviously is connected with I can't remember their names.
No, it's okay.
With the guy, and also with Isabel, because she's the one giving them promycin from her as well.
I liked how they had that woman go into the Dr. Birkhoff's room, and he pulls the hood over his head. It kind of reminded me of The Man of No Face, like I hate to mention it, but the Mel Gibson movie a few years back. It kind of reminded me of that. She pulls the hood back, and she sees his mangled face.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, that's a good movie. Good chance to see it. It's A Man with No Face. It's similar. His face is all mangled up.
Mangled up. Yeah.
And then they hit the secondary story was Sean, and he saved that rock guy's life, Nick Crowley.
Yeah. And he's like, I can't keep doing this. So.
Yeah, and then he asked him to come along with him on tour and everything else, while the other one's being sized up for a wedding gown. So this wedding is going through, huh?
Yeah, I don't. And then it looks like too that Isabel's father is learning to use his powers. I don't know if he's thinking about trying to hurt his daughter or what's up with that. But I think they need to bring Tom in and have him kill Isabella. I don't know. I'm getting scared of her.
It doesn't. He had that syringe, right?
He
was supposed to do it, but he backed off, right?
Yeah. And I think that I don't know if it'd be helpful or not, but I think that her father should find out about that.
Really? And then, because her father's developing this telekinesis or something like that, right? He's trying to throw the paper wads into the basket. He couldn't make the basket, right?
Yeah, and he ended up throwing knives into the wall. So he's getting a little bit better.
Yeah, and then, so now every 4400's got some kind of power.
Yeah, right? And I'm wondering now if Diana's going to start showing something since she was given the promycin. I don't know how that's going to pan out, but...
So I'll bring out some kind of power in her?
Yep.
Huh. So, and then, what is Sean's power? He can heal people, is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, he can heal them and hurt them. He can do both.
Really? Okay. And then Isabel, now she can hurt people with her mind, right? She's telekinesis?
Yeah, she kind of does a lot of different things, but I think mostly she can, push their power back on them, I guess, hurt them with their own power.
Really?
Yeah. And and she's got everybody scared of her. I mean, nobody knows. I think she killed that guy who was trying... I don't know if he was good or bad. I assumed he was bad, but now... She seems bad when I thought she was good, I don't know.
Now, you've been watching the show along?
Well, I didn't see... I missed the first season, but then I bought it on DVD, and I got hooked, and then I started watching from there. So.
Now, how's this season compared to the previous?
I liked last season a lot, too. I thought the whole storyline with Collier was pretty good, and I'm really interested now that he's coming back, because he's coming back from the dead. I guess that's his... I didn't realize that was his ability, but that's what I read somewhere, that was his ability. He couldn't die, or he came back from the dead, or whatever. So obviously, they're going to have to let Tom's son out of jail at some point.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, because they mentioned that last week as well, by his son being in jail, huh?
Yeah, now his girlfriend, Tom's girlfriend's gone since she was going to be arrested. So I guess, I don't know if that storyline's over or not.
Huh. Now, if you had to choose, now, I hate to be in a spot between Stargate, 4400, or Battlestar Galactica, which one would you have to choose from?
Which I like the most.
Yeah.
I still choose Stargate. Sorry.
And you still choose? Wow.
Because I've watched it for so much longer.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I like Battlestar, but I don't know. I have a harder time getting into it as much, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I go a lot when I watch shows. I tend to like the shippy stuff, the relationships, at least normally when I start out. So
yeah.
I would kind of latch on to that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if you saw, a lot of people are talking on the boards that Jimmy Bamber was in the, what's it called, the Advocate magazine?
I don't know.
I guess it's the gay magazine. That's, so they're trying to play up that part of it to get more, you know,
get more viewers.
Yeah, I guess. And then
I don't know. I still like Aaron Douglas.
Aaron Douglas.
Yeah, he's going to be my favorite, I think, forever. So.
Well, I hope to keep him on the program for years to come. And then the webisodes. Everybody's when are these webisodes starting? Nobody seems to know. They said August, but I mean it's almost August now. We still have no clue. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I did though watch the. Well, I didn't watch today's yet, but I did watch the webisodes for Eureka,
uh-huh.
which also I think I like the webisodes. They were good. And I like Eureka as a show too. I think it's going to. Take off pretty well.
Seems like the ratings are doing pretty well. I thought for sure that show wasn't going to make it. Because it's similar, kind of, to that other one that it was called The Sentinel. I don't know if you remember that. Or The Chronicle. It was the one in sci-fi. With
yeah, it was similar to The Chronicle.
Similar.
I liked that show. They shouldn't have canceled it.
Yeah, I thought, well, if that one didn't make it, you know, how's this one going to make it? You know, but I guess it's doing well. It's doing pretty well in the ratings and everything.
Yeah, and it's got comedy in it, too, which I think makes it different from all the other sci-fi shows that are on, so...
Yeah, and then, I forgot to mention, I had a celebrity encounter at the hotel this week. I bumped into Anthony Michael Hall from The Dead Zone.
Very cool.
So he was in town. Yes, I got a chance to compliment him on The Dead Zone, as well as Saturday Night Live, and was it Johnny B. Goode? I think he was in that one, and a few others. So The Breakfast Club, biggest
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I know he was in The Breakfast Club.
So
that was
very cool. It's very cool seeing him. And then now next week the 4400 is it going to be on? Because I didn't see any previews on my recording. I don't know if the local thing cut it off or what.
Remember.
I think so.
I don't remember specifically a preview. So either I'm forgetting it or you're right.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Go ahead. Yeah, well, it should be on, but I don't know what they're going to do. And then what do you call it now? I'm getting all confused now. Now Atlantis is going to have the one with Ronan on his own, right?
Yes.
And SG-1's going to do what next week?
Next week, I'm trying to remember. I have notes too, if I can find it. Next week. Oh, I know why I can't find it. Somewhere.
And then the 200 episodes.
Oh, it's about Ball coming back.
Oh, okay.
So. I don't know how, but they don't know if it's the real Ball, because they don't really know, other than the fact he's cloned, they don't even know if he's alive, I don't think, you know.
Really?
At least the original one. So.
Huh. Now, how many more of these crossover episodes are they going to do between the two series?
I have no idea. I'd like to see more.
Yeah, well, I think there are going to be more. Somebody said something, I think it was KR, said they're going to do, I think three of them, somebody said they're going to do three of them. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
That'd be good, I don't know. I'm wondering, though, if any of the crossovers are going to have... Richard Dean Anderson in it, because I know he is supposed to be in a few episodes.
Yeah, well, I think he said that. I think Richard Dean Anderson's going to be in one or two Atlantis episodes.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
So I don't know if he's going there for a vacation, or he's going to get caught up in some kind of a storyline, or what, you know?
Something.
Yeah, yeah. So, but anyway, well, we're at the end of our segment with you, Jamie. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
No, you're welcome. Have a good one.
You too. Bye. Bye.
And that was Jamie, otherwise known as Scully Girl, with our Stargate, Atlantis, and SG-1 preview. We thank you very much for being on, and in a few minutes we'll be joined by Mr. Ken Gold of Media Boulevard, as we will talk about the Comic-Con, as well as the Media Boulevard website as well. Again, I want to thank them for putting up a message board about the program. And what did they say in the chat room? Actually, it was Out Magazine. Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. It was one of them. I saw his picture on the cover. I don't know. And let's see. It's according to the site. All of our questions will be answered. So it's got to be about the 4400. So interesting. And I'm starting to slowly get into it. Like I say, the show's been on, which is its third season. So I'm still kind of struggling to get a handle on everything. But I'm slowly getting there, I guess. And I said the Keith Ledger. Somebody else asked me. Yes, he will be playing the Joker in the new Batman movie, which is The Dark Knight. So I think that's Ken Gold there.
there. And what else is going on, Jim? Once again, thank you, everybody, for being on the program. A very good first hour talking about politics, and a very good second hour with sci-fi. And what else is going on? Mel Gibson business is going to be all over the place. Oh, here's the article about Ledger playing the Joker. It's on Yahoo News, if anybody wants to look it up. Equal Entertainment, and a big picture of Heath Ledger to play Joker in next Batman, the sequel. Christian Bale will again star as Batman, and Christopher Nolan will return as the director. Dark Knight is set to begin production next year. Heath Ledger, 27, blah, 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 for Brokeback Mountain. And our challenge in casting the Joker was to find an actor who is not just extraordinarily talented, but fearless. Watching Heath Ledger's interpretation of this iconic character taking on Christian Bale's Batman is going to be incredible. I hope so. And then they mentioned that Jack Nicholson, of course, played the Batman Joker in the first Batman movie. So, but and I think we'll be joined by Ken Gold from the Media Boulevard. There we go. And Mr. Ken Gold, are you there, sir?
Yes.
What do you think of that entrance music, the orchestra?
That's pretty good, my own theme song.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm paying double time for the orchestra this week. I had the orchestra for the Stargate music, and now for that's the London Pops, I think it was, wasn't it, that did the Superman music?
Yeah, I think so.
Absolutely. So welcome to the program.
Thanks.
We had you on a while back, right?
Yeah, actually, I called in for news one time, and...
last week, and then he is a guest last year, I think, too, right?
No, actually, I don't think so.
Oh, really? Oh, well, welcome. Yeah. I thought Gus Swore had you on before. So anyway, Kent Gold is one of the poobah of Media Boulevard, correct?
Yeah, a.k.a. NetRanger. I think that's what everybody knows me by.
Very good. And I'll give everybody, we have a lot of listeners who may not be familiar with Media Boulevard, to give them an idea of what the site's about.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of the history. Media Boulevard kind of came about from the show Roswell that was popular a few years ago. And really, when Roswell started ending, we were the ones running all the campaigns to try and bring it back. I don't know if you've heard about the Tabasco mail-in. Any of that stuff.
Well, very good.
That was all kind of run off of a site called Crashdown.com.
Wow.
And we kind of turned it into, not just say the show, into charity also. Like, benefiting charity and doing good in the world was kind of the overall theme. So I guess over the 3 years, we raised about $250,000 for various children's charities, Pediatric AIDS, Pediatric Cancer Foundation,
very
and
good.
So on.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it was really, really a good thing to do. And then after the show ended, we kind of decided to spread out or spin off and follow other shows. And that's what led to Media Boulevard.
Well, I'm on the site now. It's incredible. And I also have the Media Boulevard magazine as well.
Yeah, that's something relatively new. Well, we kind of... We're really a fan site, and we still, I guess, fundamentally are a fan site. You know, just kind of rose out of that arena. But just got to be, we were getting so much media publicity and so much contact info, and we actually, you know, you kind of have the negative side of that, too. You have people all of a sudden wanting to sue you if they don't like what you're doing or if they don't like what you say about, you know, somebody they work for. So we actually had to form a corporation and spun that off, and... one of the things that we decided to do was put all of this, all of the information we had, all of the contact info, into an entertainment magazine. So we've got Media Boulevard Magazine, and we launched that in January.
Well, very good. Very good. I'm on it right now, and it's incredible. You have they're talking to the cast of Miami Vice. Now, that's doing real well. It finally knocked Pirates of the Caribbean out of the number one spot.
Yeah.
And Colin Farrell's in it, Jamie Foxx, and actually I read somewhere Don Johnson asked Colin Farrell for his jock back.
yeah, I heard about that too.
And also you talk about the cast of Ant Bully. Now that's supposed to be like a sleeper hit, huh? It's kind of going to
build throughout the summer, I guess, huh?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. I haven't seen it yet, but I've got toddlers, so I'm sure I'll see it before too long here.
Yeah, because these characters, I don't know if these characters in Amityville have anything to do with that other movie. What was that called? Ants or something like that? What was that one?
No, it's completely different.
Oh.
It was like a children's series of books that Tom Hanks' son brought home to him. The younger son, not Colin, not the one that was in Roswell, but his younger son brought it home from school, and Tom Hanks was reading it to him and decided, hey, this would be a really good movie to make.
Hmm. And then also you talked to the Kevin Smith on making Clerks 2.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't realize that movie, that first one was that popular. It mandates a sequel. Huh?
Well, it's got a cult following. It's not really big. And he actually said that in the article. It's not a really big moneymaker, mm-hmm. but it's got a really, really intense, loyal following.
Yeah. And also, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we get really good access. In fact, we pretty much, we're taken as a legitimate press source at this point.
Very good.
He was at a Comic-Con. I got to sit in the front row at Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yes. Tell us about that. I'm sorry. The chatters are asking about that. How'd that go over?
Oh, that was really incredible. I was going to kind of tell you about a lot of different things that went on, because the Battlestar stuff has been talked about a lot. But, Comic-Con is really kind of unique in the area of conventions. I mean, it's totally different. It's just so big. 110,000 people.
Wow.
And they had the air conditioning blasting in the conference hall, but it is so hot and so crowded, and it's just like this massive humanity there.
Wow. And then you were at the Galactica one, and which other one, did you go to all the panel discussions, or?
Well, the way they'd arrange it, they have about 20 going on at a time, or actually I guess about 10 going on at a time, so, they have a lot of overlapping, two or three overlapping, but I did the Battlestar Galactica, the 4400, a few for ABC Family, which I was going to kind of tell you about, because there's some really different stuff going on there.
Oh, go ahead. Yes, they've been adding a lot of new programming.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. Before, I guess about a month ago is when I really started seeing ABC Family. I mean, they're advertising everywhere, TV Guide, Entertainment Weekly, what have you. But before that, I mean, ABC Family, you kind of think of the 700 Club and Pat Robertson, calling down meteor showers on Disney World because of gay parades and assassinate foreign leaders. But, they're just, they spent a lot of money at Comic-Con. They, every bag that they gave out, they give you a gift bag when you come in. They had their advertising on every single bag. They had, like, giant banners just everywhere.
Mm. Well, good for them.
They've got three shows that they were really promoting. Kyle XY, it's a new sci-fi show. It's 10 episodes this summer. And it's kind of like, do you remember John Doe?
Oh, yeah, on Fox. That was outstanding, yeah.
Yeah, well, this is kind of like a young John Doe. But actually, this show actually predated John Doe. It, I guess by a year, it didn't get a pickup. They were talking about that at the panel session.
Really?
And, after John Doe bombed, no one really wanted to try another John Doe until now.
Huh.
But it's a really good show. It's a... this young kid wakes up, can do all these amazing things, and doesn't know who he is or where he came from. And you've got all these bad guys after him.
Yeah.
Actually, Nick Lee.
Yeah, I watched that, John. I enjoyed it when I was on Fox. It's he doesn't know anything. He doesn't know anything about himself, but he's the smartest guy. You can ask him anything, and he knows everything in the world.
Huh. So is Kyle XY similar to John Doe?
Yeah, it's very similar.
Wow.
Like I said, just more or less a teenage John Doe was kind of...
Now, how are the ratings doing for the show? Are they doing real well, or?
Well, it's doing really well for ABC Family.
Yeah.
They're kind of, I think, eighth or ninth in the networks.
Wow. And then, what's the other one? On the Media Boulevard magazine, you talk about Fallen Angels? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, now that is a good show. It's a limited series of movies that they're doing, but it's basically this kid is a Nephilim. It's like an angel-human half-breed.
Oh. Really? And,
he's got the power to forgive the fallen angels.
Hmm.
It's like this a prophecy that came out, thousands and thousands of years ago. Actually, Rick Worthy from Battlestar, the black guy that played the Cylon in The Farm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's in it.
Oh, well, good for him. He was great in The Farm.
Yeah. That movie airs again on Sunday, but that is one of the best TV movies I've seen.
Wow.
And, they're going to do... I think 4 more hours next summer, and possibly turn it into a series after that.
Very good, very good. And which other shows are they pushing? I know they're airing, let's see, my sister said, was it Falcon Beach or something like that? That's another one that they're pushing?
Yeah, that's more of a, like a drama, like a high school beach drama type show.
Yeah.
So they weren't really promoting that at Comic-Con. But,
Yeah.
Yeah, then the other one was, it's called Three Moons Over Milford. I think it starts next week, I think.
Really?
But the plot is, it's kind of a sci-fi plot, but it's kind of a, more like a comedy drama, like a Twin Peaks or a Northern Exposure. But the plot is an asteroid has hit the moon and broken it into three pieces, and it's in an unstable orbit, the pieces are. And so at any given time, one of these pieces could come down and destroy the Earth, or, you know, kill all life on Earth.
Huh.
So people start living out their dark fantasies.
Oh, that's interesting. It's kind of like, well, what is that one movie? The time machine. Remember? I don't know if you remember that movie, Time Machine. That did a few years back.
Yeah.
Yeah. That he went through time. He landed in a spot and he looked up. The moon was coming down on top of him.
Right. Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. Yeah, that's a good concept there. Too bad they're not, you know, people living on that moon and seeing how they're dealing with the moon cracking up. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
So, and what else are they pushing?
Well, that was pretty much the three that they really pushed, but, you know, it's just kind of amazing. I mean, who ever heard of ABC Family doing sci-fi before?
Yeah, I mean, they're known for, you know, family shows like, you know, Raven or whoever that is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, the thing that's weird about it, too, Kyle XY, you know, in addition to being a good sci-fi show, I mean, they tackle issues, not really issues, but, you know, masturbation, teen sex, and Ouija boards, and,
wow.
You know, just normal stuff, but... You don't really expect that on the ABC Family Channel.
Yeah,
I didn't.
No. Well, at least it sounds like it's similar to Battlestar in a way. They tackle subjects that are, you know, reflect our everyday lives here, and give it a, you know, like a twist on it, you know, with the sci-fi twist to it. Which I think it's interesting because, you know, you could relate to it, but it's also an escape. You know,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's good. Now, anybody else was there? Oh, now they said. But Tobey Maguire was there, and he was saying this is his last Spider-Man movie, right?
Yeah, that's what he's saying. You know, I'm sure if it, you know, might turn around, but yeah, that's kind of what they're saying now.
Hmm.
Then they also have another Incredible Hulk coming up.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Incredible Hulk Part 2.
A movie theater, or?
Yeah. It's,
wow.
Direct to movies.
Well, that'd be interesting.
Do you know if they're going to have the cartoon character back in there again?
I don't know. I haven't heard about that.
Are they going to actually get, like, a big bulky guy to play it?
Maybe.
Well, I think
Triple H.
Get a big bulky guy. But one thing that was interesting, Lou Ferrigno was at the conference, and he talked to the guy that's running the movie.
Really?
And he wants to do a guest role on it. So
wow.
They were announcing that in the session.
Well, he had a guest role in the first one.
I didn't see the first one.
Did he?
I didn't see the first one.
Right at the beginning. As I forgot the character's name.
Bruce Banner.
No.
Yeah.
The Hulk. Yeah, as he's walking, at the beginning, when he's walking into the building, there's a cop and another guy walking out of the building. That was Lou Ferrigno.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
I just think you need to have, like, a buff guy and not a cartoon character.
Yeah.
Right.
Throughout the movie.
I remember seeing a commercial. I go, this looks hokey. You have a cartoon character in the middle of all this, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. And then, sci-fi in the chat room saying about the heroes. AB said they will support heroes that the fans and the viewers do.
Yeah.
Were they pushing that at the Comic-Con, Heroes?
Yeah. The problem with that, it was right before the Battlestar session.
Oh.
And I think, like I told you last week, people started lining up. The doors didn't even open until 10, and they were lining up at 8:30.
Wow.
To get in for Battlestar. And Battlestar was at 2 o'clock.
Hmm.
So, you know, these people sat through, I did this too, I sat through Family Guy, and then Tales from the Hood presentation.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, just all kinds of weird stuff. And then Superman Through the Ages.
Oh.
That was actually kind of interesting.
Yeah, now I read somewhere where the Richard Donner, the original producer, I guess, he's piecing together, because the Superman 2, 75% was his, and they let him go after the first one. And so he's putting together his version of Superman 2, I guess, and he's going to release that, I guess, on DVD, apparently.
Yeah, and that's actually the session today. It was right before Battlestar. It was like immediately before Battlestar in the same room.
How was that?
Yeah, that looks pretty interesting. They actually, that was really a good one. They had a Noelle Neal, I think is her name, the woman that played Lois Lane in the very first Superman movie, the Kirk Allen black and white from the 50s. And then she was the second Lois Lane in the George Reeves movie. And she had a cameo in the Christopher Reeve. She played Lois Lane's mother.
Oh.
And in the one that just came out, she played the old woman that Lex Luthor kind of seduced and got all of her money.
Oh, the socialite. Yeah.
Yeah, so she's got quite a history. Yeah, there's something that was kind of really distasteful that happened during that session, though. They kind of went down the line, and they had a chance for people to ask questions. And when she came up, or people to ask her questions, and, have you heard about the thing with the Superman movie, the new Superman movie? Normally Superman is, was it Truth, Justice, and the American Way?
Oh, yeah. They washed that out, the Truth, Justice, and the...
all the other stuff.
And all the other stuff, yeah. They hit her about that?
Yeah, just some guy in the audience jumped up and, like, demanded to know her feelings on that.
Wow.
You know, the poor lady, you know, she's... I don't know how old she is, 70 or so, but, you know, she's kind of taken aback and doesn't really know what to say.
Hmm.
But,
Did they show any of the DVD there? Or
yeah, they showed the original opening and then the new opening for Superman 2.
Well, that must have been pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be worth the price.
Yeah, now, was Richard Donner there? Or?
Yeah.
Wow, what do you have to say now? Because he's putting this DVD together.
I think he feels vindicated. You know, he feels like things have kindly turned. And he's kind of...
Scully Girl's asking in the chat room, did they say anything about Serenity movies?
No, not during that session. I didn't. Actually, there was a Serenity presentation today. There was something else. I didn't get to go to that one either.
Hmm. And then would you go to any other presentation when you're there?
Yeah, well, the 4400, that was actually pretty interesting. We got some, there's some stuff there that I haven't really seen on the internet yet.
Really? Like what?
One thing that was really kind of a surprise, Ira Bear, the guy that runs it, was there talking, and Isabel, and why they decided to age her.
Mm.
You know, it wasn't really a plotline thing. That wasn't intended in the first season. But he said that the reason they did that, first season, they only had one infant playing the part. You know, they didn't have twins like they normally do.
Oh.
And the entire shooting schedule was basically at the whim of an infant. So they got the idea, let's just make her older.
Oh, so it just came out of out of the thin air, huh?
Basically, and you know, now that's such a major, major part of the plot. So
that's true. That might just propel the series for a couple more seasons by doing that.
Yeah, and he actually says he has it mapped out for the next 2 seasons.
Wow, good for them. Now, anything else? Was there a Star Trek panel or anything?
There were a couple of them. Yeah, actually, I went to see Chekhov talk.
Oh, really? How
was
he?
He's mainly talking about the new Voyages. I guess he's got something to do with that.
Yeah, I read somewhere he did a cameo in one. I guess George Takei, Sulu, he's going to be in another one as well.
Right.
So that's amazing how the fans are putting this all together. They recreated the whole set of the original Enterprise with the chair and everything. I mean, it's got incredible. Same thing with I don't remember that Star Wars one they did last year. I mean, that was incredible. Or 2 years ago.
I
did a fan put together a Star Wars movie based on fans. And the reason that the studios aren't suing them is because it's a non-profit. They're not making any money off of it. So
yeah, and it's really I guess that was something that Chekhov. I can't remember his name. I can't remember the actor's name.
Walter Koenig.
Koenig. Yeah, that's what he was saying, that it's just really tough to get the approval to do this, but they have to make a non-profit, and then they can put it on the internet, but to actually go to a DVD, because it would be profitable, potentially, that's a problem.
Yeah, Paramount would sue them, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
And Sci-Fi saying in the chat room, it's a sad thing that it's less about comics now.
Yeah.
Was DC and Marvel there? I mean, were they pretty pushed over into the corner now, or what?
Oh no, not at all.
No?
DC and Marvel still kind of run the thing. I mean, they have tons and tons of stuff.
Hmm.
Actually, that's one thing I wanted to mention. That's kind of cool. Everywhere you look, kind of in really random places in booths and different displays, you see Bad Wolf written, from Doctor Who.
Really?
And that's something I noticed. I still read a few comics now and then, and DC Comics has started doing that, just like kind of random scenes, behind the superheroes doing whatever. Bad Wolf will be written on the wall.
Really?
Yeah.
So they're all jumping on the Bad Wolf and was a bandwagon here or what?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be, a fan or two.
Really? So you walk behind the booths and all of a sudden you see Bad Wolf?
Yeah.
No
one really says anything about it. Just kind of, a sign here or there, kind of written on the wall somewhere.
Huh. Well, it's a good nod towards Doctor Who. They're making that kind of an impact, huh?
Yeah, definitely. And Doctor Who was really featured. Actually, the second season, actually, there was quite a bit of stuff there. You know, just posters and...
DVDs, or...?
Not DVDs, no. Yeah, but the posters and the books with David Tennant.
Wow. Well, that's good that they have that much of a presence, you know, it's a UK, you know, BBC series, that they're that big there, huh?
Oh, yeah. Actually, one of the best T-shirts, you know, that's one thing you see at Comic-Con. Everybody uses it kind of as a forum, you know, to get their message across. You see all the, you know, meat is murder and all those kind of T-shirts. But they're actually, I was kind of making notes as I would see a really cool shirt, but there's one I saw that said, who is Barty Crouse Jr.? And, like, who, W-H-O, was capitalized.
Wow.
You know, the tie-in for Harry Potter, the Goblet of Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know about that, that David Tennant was...
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, David Tennant, the new Doctor Who in Season 2, is one of the bad guys in Goblet of Fire.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when I first saw the Season 2 shows, that was kind of my first couple of episodes. It's like getting over the fact that, you know, this is Barty Crouse Jr., one of the really bad guys.
Interesting. And then now the DC Comics, now they're in the middle of a big storyline right now, right? They're 52 weeks or something like that?
Yeah. They skip ahead a year, kind of like Battlestar did. They had this really big infinite crisis, they called it, and, you know, kind of reached out for a year, kind of through all the titles. And then at the end of that, the three main DC characters, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, disappeared for a year.
Mm.
And, like, all the minor characters came to the forefront. But kind of right after that series ended, they jumped ahead a year in the main titles. And this is kind of taking you through week by week what happened in that year.
Wow. So how do they explain how the three of them just disappeared? They just vanished, or they just...
Yeah, they just they decided to go off and find themselves.
Really?
Basically.
Huh. That's interesting, because I used to be a big Batman follower in the comic books, because yeah, he's taken off a few times already. He took off when... what's his name? Broke his back, Bane.
Right.
And he took off just not too long ago again as well.
Yeah, and there's actually rumors that Batman might retire this year. That
really?
Nightwing, the original Robin, might take the role.
Dick Grayson might take over? Wow.
Yeah, and there's actually a second Nightwing now. I don't know how much you follow it, but the second Robin was a guy named Jason Todd, and they had that big...
Yeah, he was killed. Two-Face killed him, right? Or Joker, who killed
him? Yeah, Joker.
Joker.
Yeah, about 10 years ago, they had a call-in. You could vote on whether or not Robin would die.
Yeah.
But with this thing they just got through doing, it kind of changed all of continuity, and he's back.
Uh-oh.
And he's dressed as Nightwing.
Oh, really?
So the two of them are fighting it out.
Are you kidding me? So they got two Nightwings now?
Yeah.
So now he's not dead now? What's
no,
his name?
He's not dead anymore. You know, DC Comics does that.
Yeah.
Every 10 years or so, they kind of reverse everything they've done for the last 10. Hmm.
I can't imagine they'll send Bruce Wayne out to pasture, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's kind of rumors. I've seen that in a few places online. And, you know, a couple of people that actually should know are kind of saying that it might be down the line. But
huh. That's interesting. You know, because actually I did see one of the comic books in the bookstore here, and I did look at it. They are showing Batman with more wrinkles on his face. So it could be setting the stage for it. If you look, I'm like, oh, my, what are they doing to Batman here? You know?
Yeah.
He looks a lot older now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, they've definitely done that with the Flash. I mean, you had the original Barry Allen Flash, and then Kid Flash, his kid counterpart, whatever, became the Flash for the last 10 years or so.
Wow.
And now his kid counterpart is the current Flash.
Huh. I can't imagine him getting rid of Bruce Wayne. I mean, that's, you know... It's a major DC Comics character there, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm sure he'd have, you know, kind of a new role or kind of an advisory, you know, overseeing the younger generation or something.
Well, I know for a while, you know, here I'm digging into my comic book history here, they did an Earth 2 business. They had Earth 2, and then Bruce Wayne was actually, the police commissioner at the end before he got killed off, and he came back as Batman and ended up getting killed off, you know?
Right.
So I don't say do something like that. I don't know. I mean, they can reach into the something and pull out a younger Batman, a younger Bruce Wayne or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and then they had the Dark Knight Returns kind of in the 90s, I think. That was the Frank Miller series after Batman had been gone for 20 years, and he comes back.
Yeah, and now I know Marvel's releasing another of the Ultimate Avengers DVD. That's gone over real well, huh? The first one sold, you know, did real well, so they come up with the second one. You think that would spur a movie?
Yeah, you'd think so, and they actually talked about that in the session where they talked about the Incredible Hulk. You know, the next big thing is Iron Man.
Ooh, yeah, really? Who's going to play him? I know they talked about, what's his name playing him, Tom Cruise, but I don't know, he might be too old to play him by now, huh?
Yeah, I'm not actually sure if it's been cast yet. Mm. I know it's gearing up. It's like in 2 years it's going to be, you know, summer of 2008, I think.
Well, that'd be interesting seeing an Iron Man movie. I don't know how they're going to do that unless they make him like the Iron Man character, like a comic book cartoon, because, you know, wearing the suit and everything. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's one thing they said is, you know, it's not really a coincidence that the Avengers are the, you know, the characters that are getting movies. So.
Oh, it's all planned at the...
Well, they didn't really say that for sure, but, you know, it's kind of, you know, they could definitely do an Avenger movie in a few years.
Definitely, definitely. Well, Captain America, I'm still kind of surprised there really hasn't been a big Captain America movie, you know what I mean? They did a couple TV movies and like that, but I'm really stunned. You know, Spider-Man, yes, but you think Captain America would be like their second, you know, you think all the characters are Marvel, I mean, you think Spider-Man, and I think Captain America would be number two, you would think, you know, and then Iron Man.
Yeah, you'd
think so. Then Iron Man, you know.
Yeah, and then the other one is Ant-Man.
Ant-Man, who's that?
Yeah, I never even heard of that character.
Yeah, I never heard of him either. Who is he?
Well, he's one of the Avengers, I guess, one of the really minor characters, but they're doing a movie.
I read some, well, whatever happened to the Silver Surfer movie they're supposed to make, and then what is it? Somebody else said it's supposed to be a Moon Knight movie.
Yeah, well, Silver Surfer is going to have a role in Fantastic Four, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Actually, though, maybe going back to Battlestar for a minute, since... kind of coming up on the time here.
Oh, yeah.
The one thing that really I thought was really obvious at the panel that I really haven't seen online is, you know, you keep hearing about this that they're going to box one of the Cylon characters. The Cylons are going to take out one entire model.
Oh yeah,
or one entire series, and at least they're trying to make you think. I mean, everything is really pointing to that being Lucy Lawless.
Oh. That's right, because she's signed on for 10 episodes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they keep saying that. It's like, well, we can't really tell you who it is. And then Lucy would come on and say, well, yeah, I'm on there for 10 episodes. And then I think it was Ron Moore was talking about they have to do it because one of the Cylon characters decides that they're God. They're the Cylon God. And then, you know, there's an interview with Lucy the day before saying, yeah, they asked me if I wanted to play God, and that's you know, such a cool role. So it's like I'm just surprised it's not out there, that people aren't making that connection. Maybe it's you know, fake red herrings or something.
Really? Yeah, because I thought it would be Cavill. It would be, what's his name's character? Dean Stockwell's character.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you kind of think that. But, you know, how else are they going to write Lucy out after she's in there for 10 episodes?
Yeah, unless they have her sign a contract and she's, you know, like Richard Hatch, she drops in and out.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. Nobody really knows how integral she's going to be in this third season yet, you know?
Yeah. Well, pretty big from what everybody says.
Really? So that'd be interesting, huh?
But the other thing, Olmos is really talking about, this is the darkest show or the darkest thing he's ever been on. And he says that this has kind of been out there but not really talked about a whole lot. But he said at the end of the season, you're going to really wonder who is the good guy and who is the bad guy.
Wow.
And he's talking about the genocide thing, that apparently there's some kind of plague that the colony finds. They find a base star that's, I guess all the Cylons are dying. And they get the opportunity to spread that virus throughout the entire Cylon population.
Oh, really?
And they have to make the decision of whether or not to do that.
Huh.
He said it was kind of like the American Indians and the smallpox.
Really? So who's ultimately going to make that decision? Adama?
Yeah, I would think so. Or Adama and his...
I don't know. I would think, you know, because they did that one episode where he decides to bring the fleet back together to play that Abraham Lincoln type music for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I imagine he'll decide not to annihilate them with the plague, you know?
Yeah.
I would imagine, because, you know, they did that, and can I put them in that moral crisis like what Janeway did with the ship. You know, I can't do that. So, you know, she ends up sending the ship on that long journey back to Earth. You know,
right, exactly.
They'll do the same. I can't imagine they have Adama. Go ahead and, you know, I don't know. Who knows how these episodes are going to play out? Maybe by then you'll be wishing they'll wipe them out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that was kind of news is they talked about the number. You know, the number of survivors is always really a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And it was something like 50,000 when season two ended. And it's 39,000 when they come back.
Well, they lost. Well, they lost a few on the what do you call them? The blew up Cloud Nine, right?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that was a few thousand probably, but I guess things aren't really going well on the planet.
Mm.
You know, with the occupation, it's 4 years or 4 months later when they come back.
Yeah. So I wonder if they'll. If they go back up to in space, I wonder if they'll trip over some more survivors. You know, some ships that are floating around from the colonies.
Yeah, they certainly could. I mean,
Yeah, I don't know. Uh-oh, Ken, that's our Cylons killing off the show for another week.
Okay.
So we thank you for being on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And thank you again for the message board on Media Boulevard. I thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Have a good one. And that was Ken Gold of MediaBoulevard.com. We thank him for being on. And I thank Jamie, and also thank you to Michael J.W. Stickings. And tomorrow in the morning will be Daily Noise, and Friday is Spankwagon, followed by King Hesh. And next week, I might be, I don't know, trying to get to...